Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. Now, let's get to the news. Today, we are speaking with Sharen Haskel. Until last month, she was Israel's deputy foreign minister and now the founder of a brand new political party called Israel First. But before we get to it, there's a big news story that she talks about during her interview that might need an explainer before she gets into it. Airport staff at Ben-Gurion Airport halted check-in and grounded flights from 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday, so that was today, and the strike hit roughly 100,000 travelers during peak summer season. Strike leader Pinchas Idan called conditions torture, while Transport Minister Miri Regev branded it as an illegal strike and vowed organizers would pay a heavy price, directing the airport's authority to petition the labor court. Opposition figures like Gadi Eisenkot and ex-transport ministry heads say that this was proof of government mismanagement, while the ministry says that it's investigating and will act with a very heavy hand if they can confirm that this was a deliberate airport shutdown. Now, Sharen Haskel, longtime member of Knesset, says that this is just unacceptable. I wanted to give you a little bit of background before she came on the show and talked about it, you know, in passing. Let me give you the quick version of who Sharen is. Born in Toronto, she made Aliyah as a little baby with her parents. She grew up in a city in Israel's center called Kfar Saba. She served in the IDF and in the Israel Border Police during the Second Intifada, studied veterinary nursing in Australia, and came back home to finish a political science degree here in Israel. She entered the Knesset in 2015 with Likud, but in 2021, she left to help Gideon Sa'ar find the party that is today called New Hope, one of the parties that eventually joined Benny Gantz's National Unity Party. She became deputy foreign minister in 2024. She's also known here as one of the Knesset's most outspoken voices for cannabis reform and environmental policy. And she's only 42 years old and has given birth to 3 children during her time in office. Last month, Sharen resigned from the government over legislation that would stop the arrests of ultra-Orthodox people who have been evading the military draft, men who are by law supposed to be serving in the IDF like everybody else. A few weeks after resigning over the issue, she launched Israel First. Sharen has not announced a full Knesset list of people that she's planning to run with and get into the Knesset along with her, though she mentions on our show the first name that she's dropping, who's going to be running with her. So keep your ears open for that. The elections are set for October 27th, and Sharen says that she wants to unite everyone, but whether the polls show that that is possible is a different story. Sharen's team reached out to the Israel Daily News for this interview, and we're happy to host it. Welcome to the Israel Daily News podcast, Sharen Haskel. How are you?
Hi, it's good to see you, Shana. Stressful time just before elections, but it's good.
That's great. Well, I'm glad that you're here and I know that you're busy, so we're going to jump right into it. You resigned as deputy foreign minister over the ultra-Orthodox or Haredi draft legislation. Walk me through the moment that you decided that this was the line that you wouldn't cross and that you were leaving the government.
That was a very difficult day, you know. I mean, it's been a very difficult year. But for a year and a half, I've been fighting off the bill of exemption. And for a year and a half, there's been a huge battle to try and make sure, because this legislation is immoral and it's also harmed Israel's security needs. This was said very, very clearly by the chief of the army, by soldiers in the field. And, you know, you do the political battle and you go through it and you pay political prices. And a week before the end of the parliament, before the parliament dissolved, you know, my feeling was, oh my God, we managed to do it. We pushed out the exemption bill. They're not going to legislate it. We won. This is, you know, it's Israel's security has won. Israel's moral has won. We are backing the soldiers in the front line. And it was sort of an uplifting feeling until 2 days before the dissolvement, they brought this legislation that gave a get out of jail free card to people who have broken the law in Israel, where, you know, dozens of them, if not hundreds of them, are sons and grandchildren and great grandchildren of parliament members who've legislated this legislation. And it was heartbreaking, and I was furious. I was furious because I could already see the end and the light at the end of the tunnel. And then 2 days before, it's just shattered. And not just me, it shattered, you know, those who have served Israel the most for 3 years in the front lines, in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Syria. And I was fuming, and this is when I decided enough is enough, and I cannot be part of a government that does that. And this is a promise I've made a year and a half ago, that if the exemption laws are passed, I will resign from my position. And I would have done it a year and a half ago, 6 months ago, or unfortunately 2 days before the parliament dissolved.
Thank you. Was it important to you to keep that promise, that maybe whether it was a promise to yourself or a promise to your constituents, people that voted for you?
Of course. I mean, everything that I tell them, promise them. I promised them one time that I will do everything in my capability to fight for them and to watch their back in parliament. And I've never intended to break that promise, and I will never break that promise. And especially after everything that we've been through in the last 3 years, this is what we need to put at the top of the pyramid of, you know, of our interest and what, you know, who is the population that we need to look after. And it is the civilians who have contributed the most and paid the most prices. I mean, their families haven't seen one of the parents, whether the mom or the dad, for almost 3 years. I don't want to even go and start talking about, you know, what their children are feeling and what they're going through. Families who have lost their loved ones. Some of them were injured physically, some emotionally with PTSD. And this is not even including the economical price of people losing their businesses, their jobs, because who's going to wait for 3 years for someone to come back from the war and keep their position? And, you know, there's cases, incredible cases here in Israel where they did, but not for everybody. And can a business survive without the owners? You know, and all of these things that they've paid, those are the ones who are needed to be rewarded the most here in Israel. And in the last few months, the pyramid has just turned upside down. And we are looking and investing money and giving benefits to those who are contributing the least on the security aspect and on the economical aspect.
Yeah, this is really something that a lot of politicians are talking about. I'm hosting the Tribe Tel Aviv election series, where I'm bringing in a number of different parties, as many parties as I can get, to come to Tel Aviv to speak to the Olim or the internationals. Not everybody who's here is a voter. Some people are trying to figure out if they want to make Israel their next home, and they haven't officiated their aliyah or gained their citizenship yet. So we're bringing in all of these different parties, and a lot of parties are talking about this draft legislation, and a lot of people are feeling that the country really needs to be making a shift to include everybody in the draft and not to have any exemptions. So it really is fascinating to see that this is coming up at the top of the list for so many parties. What I actually want to move into is the fact that you are opening your own party, and that's what we're going to talk about most today. There are about a dozen political parties, at least more than 10, that are, you know, campaigning right now for their spots in government ahead of the October 27th election. You are the only woman that is the head of a political party. We don't know that much about Israel First, which is the name of your party. I'd love for you to share with us about Israel First. Do you think that it is normal that you're the only woman in 2026 that is leading a political party? And can you tell us who is joining you?
So it's not normal, but it's something that I'm not surprised of. You know, I'm very proud. I'm a woman, I'm Mizrahi, I'm a former combat soldier, I'm a mother. And I think that that is something that is really missing in Israeli politics. A motherly figure that will look after the country, after the people, from the stomach, from the womb, okay? And will fight for her children no matter what the price is. And unfortunately, you know, we see less and less women who are coming into politics, who are willing to pay prices in order to get into politics and represent, you know, the people. And it's very unfortunate, but I've got a few women who are joining in. We have quite a few people who served in the front lines who are joining in. One of them, for example, one of my running mates is Roi Denino, which is a Sgan Aluf b'Miluim. I'm not sure exactly to which rank to translate it, but I think some will understand. He has served for more than 600 days in the reserve. And he left the 7th of October, his wife and 5 children with his gun, and went to defend the South. That is, for me, the essence of who needs to be in the leadership positions, okay? And so there's many people that are younger who are coming in and are going to bring a huge contribution into the parliament. We are a right-wing party. We refuse to play the camps game, because Israel's politics have become all about two camps. The everything Bibi Netanyahu says is pure and gold and right, or the other camp that says that everything that Bibi says is terrible, horrendous, and wrong. And we are done with it. This is what got us to the point of destruction. And it is about time that we start making our choices based on values, based on what we are going to do here in Israel, and not on those crazy two camps who have destroyed the unity of our people and the capability of working on important issues like the economy, the security, the education, the welfare, everything. And so we are a right-wing party that believes in sovereignty, that believes that holding the land of Israel as part of a security strategy for our people and for our country. We believe that war and battles needs to be won, and we don't need to be afraid of winning those battles. We believe in liberating Israel's economy, in reducing those massive taxes that very few other countries and civilians in other countries have to pay, such an enormous amount of taxes and funds, and every single corner they ask you for more and more and more money. And to see how we can reduce the bureaucracy, and unfortunately have created a situation where many people are closing their businesses, their startups, just because of bureaucracy and crazy regulations. And we speak about fixing the education by making it completely different, that the Ministry of Education is only going to be the supervisor and not the provider, and to start opening different providers that are first based on local councils. And we have many plans like that. I mean, you can go to our website. It's called Israel First, in Hebrew, Israel Trila. We have the website, we have social media, and you can see there what we're doing. I mean, right now, for example, the unions at the airport have shut down the airport. And here in Israel, the unions have too much power. Already 8 years ago, I've written two legislations that are going to restrict the power that those unions actually hold, because here in Israel, it's enormous. They just shut down, really, like it is the only international airport, because the three other ones are very small. But this is the main airport to Israel during the busiest day of the year. It's insanity. It is absolutely unacceptable. And so those two legislations that I wrote 8 years ago are going in, that I've been fighting to put in without any fear with colliding head to head with those unions. That's going to be two of our conditions to go into the next coalition, as well as other, like the recruitment bill, obviously, where there's a compromise that I wrote 2 years ago about the yeshivas borders. That I've also outlined for a very long time. I've been trying. So, I mean, we have many, many programs that we've built in order to fix the broken system that Israel and Israelis are living through.
So just yesterday, I conducted an interview with member of Knesset Oded Forer from Israel Beitenu, and he actually said that Israel Beitenu plans to try to systemize the education system so that all of the public schools across Israel will be under a similar curriculum and it'll be more centralized. And the reason for that was to try to get more Orthodox, more Haredim into an education system in which more subjects are available, including mathematics and science. You're saying the exact opposite.
The exact opposite. I mean, because Israel's education system is so centralized. I mean, there is only one curriculum that's being dictated by the Ministry of Education, inspected very closely, and they are the one who are dictating everything. I mean, every child is different. It's about time that we put an upgrade to our education system. Some parents want a scientific school so that their children can study just computing and AI and whatever. And some parents will want an art school that speaks about history and art and many other things. And some people prefer the Montessori way or the democratic way or the Anthroposophy way. Some people want their children to study in ultra-Orthodox schools. I mean, this is the most basic decision that the parents need to do about the value. Some of them wants a religious school and someone wants zero religion. It is impossible to have a one-way system to educate all the children of Israel. This is a very communistic approach. And you know, in every point where I touch this thing, it's about the freedom of choice, the freedom of choice of parents for the values and the education that their children are receiving. And if you can imagine, I mean, it's very obvious what they're doing, for example, in Texas or Sweden, where every parents receive a voucher, a certain amount of money to send their children into school, and they can choose for their children based on the quality of that school. I mean, any parents want the best education for them, but also a personalized one. And so this parent will be able to move them into a high quality school. And you know what will happen with the schools who are in low quality and do not get good results? They'll be shut down because no one's going to come with them with that voucher, with that money into them. So they won't be able to continue and stand on their own 2 feet, and they'll have to reform it. And someone that has a really good quality education that many parents maybe are on waiting list will go into that failed school and we'll build another branch of the one that is very successful. And I believe in parents who are making good choices for their children.
One thing that I've actually noticed here in Israel is that a lot of the schools don't have an emphasis on arts and culture, and there's a big pressure on young people to study science and mathematics because that's really what's earning people money in Israel. How do you respond to that? Is it important for young people and all people to be engaged in the arts and culture?
Look, I think there's incredible creative mind here in Israel. I believe there are brilliant people who are advancing art and culture all around the world. Yet I believe that the ones who are, first of all, anyone that is doing something good and good quality is something that the public will want to show or will want to see. And therefore, they'll pay money to go and see it. I just paid, I think it was like 1,000 shekels for 5 tickets for a show in the theater for my three little girls and us. Okay. And that's a lot of money, okay, to pay for the theater. But it is because it's a very high quality show that I want my children to see. And so the people of Israel know to make those choices and they go to see things that they're interested in. And that are good quality. And if anything, I think that this is exactly the point where the Ministry of Culture doesn't need to subsidize, art that no one wants to see, but to actually subsidize things who the public want to see. I mean, anyone can do whatever they want, it's a free country. But if you go and you ask the country to subsidize it, then there have to be someone who wants to see it and not just to throw this money into the bin. And I think that's part of the problem of how the art has become so political, because what they're doing, they're funding art that is very extremely politically, that doesn't have a lot of crowd that comes and actually watch it. And the people who are choosing it are politically affiliated with them, unfortunately. And it cannot be about politics.
That is very interesting. So, and it sounds like, you're erring on the side of letting the market dictate what comes to the forefront.
Look just on the show of Tehran. It was done, yes, with public money as well, and then they sold it globally, and it is a very popular show all around the world, being paid royalties and licensing and things like that. So you can make incredible art and film and everything here in Israel.
I want to move into the other parties that are emerging and hear what you have to say. Something that I've heard you talk about a lot is the political homelessness, talking about people that don't have a political home for the last several years here in Israel. Right around the time, I believe right after you launched your party, just days later, Gilad Erdan, former UN representative, and Yuli Edelstein, created the Unity Party. There have been a couple of other parties that have come up as well. What makes Israel First different from the other parties that are emerging right now? And if you could share with us how you're bringing your party and what you're doing to make your party successful, we'd love to hear it.
So the first thing is that one of our first campaign was to come and create unity among the right-wing parties who are running, okay? Because I believe more in unity than in division. Unfortunately, in politics, there's a lot of ego and a lot of people are making different calculations. I make none. I still call out loud, come and sit around the table. Let's make a compromise, all of us. Let's come to an equation that all of us are happy with and run together. But I'll say this, after all the thinking and the thoughts and the debating, and there were many, many conversations, what happened on the last week was absolutely heartbreaking because so many people in Israel felt deserted. They felt betrayed, politically betrayed. That those people they elected into the parliament have betrayed Israel's security with those bills of exemptions. Okay. They've betrayed Israel's economy with literally legislation that is a political bribe before elections. And for me, it was enough with discussion. I'm running in. I'm building this platform to bring back hope to these people, to understand that we are watching their back, that we're defending them, that we will fight for them. And I think that putting aside all the political calculation and coming from what I told you, from the womb, the mother that is going to protect her children at any cost. And this is what I've been doing for the last 3 years. And this is what I'm doing now. I care about Israel's unity. I think this is the greatest weapon we have against our enemies. But unfortunately, not everybody thinks the same. Okay? And I'll say, until the last day of those lists, I'm willing to sit around the table and to find an equation where all of us can go together in unity to prove the people of Israel that this is something we can do.
What is going to happen if Israel First falls short of those four seats that you need to get in order to bring your party into the government?
So a few things. One, we will receive those four seats. Okay. We're going all the way until the end. And the last thing is enough with political calculation. Oh, I will vote for this party because then this one will be prime minister without this coalition with this or that or that. This has become one of the greatest tragedy in politics because everybody are disappointed. None of their strategic planning politically have worked. I have a very simple suggestion. Vote for who your values align with. Vote for people you believe will represent you well. And trust me, you will never be disappointed because you know that you put a name of a person that can be your voice and will fight for your freedom.
Of your five pillars, you have security, free markets, education, civil liberties, and Zionist unity, right? As you're going around and you're campaigning and you're meeting Israelis throughout the country, what's really resonating with voters? What are the voters saying that they care about? I know what the politicians are saying. What do the voters say to you when they sit in front of you?
So they say they care for their children and they want a better future for their children. And all of these things come into this equation. I think, though, something that resonates the most, especially during the last few days, is a problem with a post-traumatic stress, with PTSD that hasn't been handled good enough. I've put a legislation 8 years ago that create an authority for PTSD that can give a lot of solutions to broken people who came back with a transparent injury. And those people are the one that we have to put in front of our eyes because we've sent them to the battle and they came back broken. We need to help them come back on their own two feet. And what I heard 2 days ago at, you know, the morning, the Shiva of Uriel from Carmiel, who committed suicide after dealing with post-traumatic stress, was that almost every single day, a soldier, a former soldier, commits suicide because of PTSD. This is something that has to shake the ground of anyone that's walking, that needs to be screamed out loud. They need help, every single one of them, whether they admit it or not, whether they'll tell you about the symptoms or not. Each and every single one of them has to go through treatment to make sure they are safe. They are the purest, the most kindest, the bravest, the most incredible people who went out to defend us. And we owe them that. We really owe them that.
Just several years ago, you were working hard to decriminalize and make cannabis legal throughout the country. Are you still working on cannabis reform in Israel?
Yes, I've been working for the last decade on completely reforming everything to do with medicinal cannabis. And unfortunately, that coalition of religion, the ultra-Orthodox and the Arab party, time after time have blocked the capability of reforming the medicinal field. I have, you know, a legislation that can actually continue and develop the industry here in Israel that can, you know, give a medicine to people who are in need. And they've blocked it year after year, coalition after coalition. There will be two conditions of entering the coalition. One of them is reforming the medicinal of cannabis and also psychedelic treatment for PTSD, the experiment that we want to bring from the United States and from other parts of the world to see whether they can actually treat PTSD, and legalization. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. There are brilliant researchers here in Israel who can be the headline, okay, of all of that. And this is an industry that can bring billions of dollars into Israel's pocket.
Thank you so much. Is there any final remarks, anything that we didn't get to that you'd like to share?
No, we're going through a difficult period of time, a very challenging one. And it's very important for me to try and resonate, you know, there is a party that will forever keep your trust as a holy, a point. For us, the most important thing is to fix the broken system. We will watch your back. We will represent the hardworking Israeli families, the hardworking civilians, those who have contributed the most. And I know this country needs a mother, okay? We're not running for the prime ministership. We're looking for the offices that we can fix, break it down and rebuild as a strong and thriving industries.
Thank you so much, Sharon Haskell. It's absolutely wonderful to have you with us here at the Israel Daily News. We wish you b'hatzlacha, a lot
Thank
of
you
luck
very, very much.
And a lot of help to the country. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Shana.
Now, the Israel Daily News has a bit of news ourselves. After 6 years of operating without monetization, the Israel Daily News is working with a new distributor, and we will be having ads rolled into our show. You might start noticing that as early as today or in the next episode. It's a great step for us. We have been avoiding any type of monetization that didn't come directly from our supporters, our listeners, but we are making strides and moving forward. And this is going to help us grow our show as well and reach a wider audience around the world. You might start noticing the Israel Daily News podcast player popping up on popular news sites like News Nation or The Hill or other sites where people get their news around the world. You might see the Israel Daily News player on the left, on the right, on the bottom, on the top. And we intend to attract more listeners in that way. The Israel Daily News has its own direct donation platform. If you would like to support us, if you used to support us and you no longer support us, you might not know this, but we actually lost dozens of our listener contributions. We had monthly contributions from dozens of listeners, but there was a major acquisition in which our distribution platform got taken over by Spotify, and we lost all of those contributions. So we'd be happy to have you back. Listeners can make a one-time donation or a monthly one through our website, israeldailynews.org. Click on contribute or sponsor. Support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. We do not have any bosses. We do not work for the government, and no one tells us what to do, what to say, or how to report. We have our own sources. And if you appreciate that, then you can continue to support us on our website through our donation page. You can also follow Israel Daily News across our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn, as well as on X. Our Twitter handle or X handle is Israel Podcast. And now let's hear a Torah thought from Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
This week's Torah portion begins with Ki Teitzei L'Melchama Al Oyvecha, when you go out to war against your enemies. And if you know a little bit of Hebrew, you might realize that it says Al Oyvecha, upon your enemies. It doesn't mean against your enemies, it means on, that you're on top of your enemies. And this has a very significant lesson that we can't view opposition to godliness and to our divine service as something that is on par with that divine service. Like, these are just two equal enemies fighting at each other. You know, this dualistic idea, there's good and evil, and they're really basically just as powerful fighting each other, and, you know, hopefully good will win. No, goodness, godliness is far and away just incomparable to anything that covers over godliness. And we have to have this realization that when we are going against evil forces that are trying to dissuade us from serving God properly, really, we have the upper hand. We are al ivecha. We are on top of our enemies. We are the ones that are higher because we are coming with the strength and power of goodness and godliness. And the Haftorah also reflects this idea of going out to war on your enemies in the sense that primarily it's a comforting Haftorah where, you know, we're again in these weeks between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah, where we are being comforted after the destruction of the temple. However, there is a portion of the Haftorah where it says you'll broaden the place of your tent, you know, where you have this idea of getting a wide tent. And politically, we speak of this. This is perhaps where this concept comes from. And he says you'll expand to the right and to the left, and your descendants will possess nations. So we have this idea of going out and really conquering the world, so to speak, for God in a spiritual sense. Right? Because it says that we'll possess nations and populate desolate cities, right? Things that are void of goodness and godliness, we will come in and we'll fill it, and we will make sure that godliness is revealed in this place. And while this has been true to an extent during the exile, it certainly comes to fruition during the Messianic era, where, as we say later in the Haftorah, that even though God forsook us for a brief moment, right, and there was terrible trials and tribulations, that he will certainly have compassion and everlasting kindness with the redemption when Mashiach, the Messiah, comes, and there will be everlasting peace. And he compares this to the waters of Noah, right? That he could have said the waters of the flood. Why does he say the waters of Noah? So first of all, right, just like the waters of Noah will never happen again, he says this worldwide flood will never happen again, so too, these trials and tribulations, you know, after the redemption of the Messianic era, we'll never have any of these difficulties again. But also, it's not called the waters of the flood, it's called the waters of Noah. Now, in a certain sense, this is a contradiction, because the flood was, the waters of the flood was terrible and disruptive and destructive. But the name Noah, Noach, means tranquility, rest. And so these are two opposite ideas. But the truth is that the floods themselves, the difficulties themselves, what does it represent, right? The flood is sort of the drowning in our difficulties in the world and making a living and so on and dealing with the physical aspects of the world. And that actually paves the way for there to be rest, right? It makes full repentance possible. When you have these difficulties, you know, it's if everything's good, then how are you going to grow, right? When things are difficult, when there's a challenge, when there's a stressor, that's when you shine, right? How do you get the oil out of the olive? You have to press it. And so too, when we're pressed, that's when we really shine. That's when our inner self, our true self, comes about. And so when we go through life and we can observe and really appreciate the divine providence that happens in our lives, and withstanding the ethical challenges that we face in the workplace and elsewhere, and really yearning for that divine closeness, then we can come to Noach. We can come to rest on a higher spiritual ground than we could have achieved otherwise. Shabbat Shalom.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, August 20th, 2026, and it's currently 80 degrees Fahrenheit, partly sunny here in Tel Aviv. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. It's a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, plus a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom of our website, drop your email address in, and you can get on our mailing. You'll get my articles that I'm publishing. You'll get a roundup of the top five stories that you need to know from the past week. And a lot of the times I include links to my published work at the Jerusalem Post and the other outlets for which I contribute. Have a great and productive day and an excellent weekend. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.